participation. Thursday, February 19th, 6 to 8 p.m. The community is invited to participate. The admission is free. The event will be broadcast live on WBAI 99.5 FM. The guest panelists include Dorothy Pittman Hughes, activist and author, the Reverend Calvin Butts, pastor of the Abyssinian Baptist Church, and others. Doors open at 5:30 p.m. We go on the air at 6 p.m. sharp. For travel and seating information, please call 646-688-5886. See you there.
The WBAI Local Station Board will be meeting on Wednesday, February 11th at the ARC Central Harlem Senior Center, located at 120 West 140th Street between Malcolm X and Adam Clayton Powell Boulevards in the Village of Harlem in the borough of Manhattan. The meeting starts at 7 p.m. The public is welcome.
Oh, turn the music back on.
In a minute! First, noble human Homer Simpson will explain his primitive yet beautiful culture.
But perhaps Earth's greatest achievement is moon rocks. Oh, and the golden age of radio.
Ooh. Truly a species with much to offer.
Seriously? Are we listening to the same guy?
Yes, another unsolicited celebrity endorsement for the golden age of radio. Join me, Max Schmid, for the best of radio's history. Comedies, mysteries, you name it, we'll have it. Programs you may remember, if you're over 80, and programs that you've never heard of before. All fascinating stuff, Sunday nights, 7 to 9, right here on WBAI New York.
Thanks to you.
Thank each and every one of you for coming by.
And while he's thanking those folks, let me take this opportunity to thank all of you, our listeners and support staff, our contributors, our interns, the volunteers, producers, and the entire crew that works countless hours to bring WBAI into your lives.
This is Hank Key, and this is the Personal Computer Show. And normally our start time is at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and this is an expanded version of the Personal Computer Show. Hopefully next week we'll have Off the Hook back on at 7 o'clock. And with me this evening, I have two gentlemen that are going to help me with this expanded show. First of all, we have locally a voice that you've heard before, but he's seldom heard for whatever bashful reason he has. Hi there, Michael Horowitz.
Hi there, Hank. Good evening.
How you doing?
Very good.
And from the, I don't know, from Surf City, USA? I forgot the name of what Surf City really, you know. Hey, David, how you doing in Huntington?
I'm fantastic. I can't complain. And, I just want to say right at the start of the show, get out your checkbook, folks.
Okay. We're on a two-hour expanded period, and it's a membership drive. But what we're planning is to do mostly regular programming, and we hope that you'll find the information useful, informative. And we've been off the air for the last 2 weeks, so we have a lot to cover. But before we do that, I'm going to keep it very simple. You know, when we have too many premiums, people start, you know, it's like you go to McDonald's and you see over 80 items, and the biggest complaint at McDonald's is it takes too long to process a line because people look up there and they think about it. I'm going to keep this very simple. We really have two personal computer premiums plus a third one, And then we have one generic one that I'll talk about. You know, one of the things that I've been getting a lot of questions on is Windows XP. Well, it's no longer supported. And not only is it no longer supported, Microsoft has done it in a way where all the support material they have is no longer on the internet. Well, it's in the wild somewhere, okay? And with Windows XP, there is a version of SP4 that is in beta form that people are using without complaint, and Microsoft have never really complained about it. So we have a Windows XP support kit, and that's one of the premiums. And we also have a Windows 7 support kit, which happens to have the XPM software on it. In other words, you're able to run Windows XP under Windows 7 in virtual mode. And in fact, what Microsoft did was, if you want to run Windows XP under Windows 7, they even gave you a free legitimate copy of it. Well, they took that down too. So we have
only apply to the professional version of Windows 7, or is it also for the home version?
Only apply to the professional and up version, because there was also an ultimate version too,
and an enterprise version, right? Yeah.
And the enterprises, and the only difference between the enterprise and the ultimate is the number of languages. You know, enterprise. I mean, you could easily download the 86 different languages, and plug it in, and then you have the ultimate version. And so those two basic Windows support kits we have, the Windows XP support kit is a $50 requested premium. The Windows 7 support kit is a requested donation of $50.
What else is in the support kit for Windows 7 besides the XP virtual machine?
What I have included on it is the capability of giving you all the things so that when you're running Windows 8 or 8.1, actually, you know, Microsoft is up to 8.1 now, that you can put a lot of the things that you're used to have in Windows 7 that's not in 8.1. For instance, the games. The other are the gadgets, and there are other things on it. So, and also the endearing start button, the globe, and it will automatically go into desktop mode instead of the modern mode, the metro mode, whatever they want to call it. So if you are still running Windows XP, which a lot of people are, and you haven't downloaded or saved a copy of all the patches, well, it's available from WBAI. It's a $50 donation. And if you're running Windows 7 and you wanted that XP support, which Microsoft took down, it's no longer available. It's available in the Windows 7 kit. Now, in the Windows 7 kit, Michael, there are 3-4 pieces on it that people don't realize. Originally, Windows XP required that you had hardware virtualization. And then what they did was they came up with an extra piece of software called software virtualization, so that even if you didn't have the hardware, meaning you could run it on a very low-end CPU, you can still run XP.
Again, this is for running Windows XP virtually under Windows 7.
Correct. Correct. And it runs very well. And I happen to like it because what it does is that, unlike the true definition of virtual operating system, is that, you know, you have a window there to run another operating system, and everything is locked into the operating system. Into that window. You can't do anything else. But the way Microsoft treated it was that each program or component was interchangeable with Windows 7 operating system. I'll give you an example of that. Suppose you have a scanner or an old printer, and you only have XP drivers for it. Well, that's not exactly an application program. It's really software drivers. Guess what? You can install your Windows XP software drivers under XPM, and it works fine. And it treats it like as it was part of Windows 7. So
what other premiums do we have?
Well, I also have a Linux distros, and this was offered last year, and it was very, very popular. I didn't offer it in between the fundraising, only because there was a major change in it, and I didn't want to have people go download their change and put their own change. And the reason why people wanted this was it has Windows support integrated already. You don't have to download Wines and figure out how to put it in and how to run it. It's all in there, and it consists of three different distros.
Just to be clear, this isn't full Windows support. this is partial emulation of Windows.
It's not really emulation.
Not to belabor the point, but the concept is that some Windows programs can be installed and run under Linux.
Let me put it this way. I would say most can that I've already tested. So it's actually a few that can't. In other words, if you get into the real memory mode and so on, that would be tough. But if for most of them, it runs fine. Of course, assuming you have the resources, you know, like you have enough hard disk and memory and so on.
Right.
And
what about advanced games?
Well, I'm not a gamer, so I really don't know, okay? I'll be honest with you. I have enough.
They tend to go real memory frequently.
Well, again, games are very, very specific. You know, I'm talking about the, you know, what 80% of the people use, which is basically office functions, audio editing, video editing, browsers, and so on. And in fact, how about this? You know, one of the things that's not in any of the Linux distros, because it's just not available, tax preparation.
Yes, of course.
And so if you want to run Linux because it's free, it's easy, it's nice, but it doesn't have all those applications. But the key one that I always bring up is tax prep. So now there is a open source tax prep for Linux, but that's if you're filing a 1040Z, and if you go beyond that, you go back to paper and pencil. So those are the three premiums. They're all $50 donation. And for those who want to get a jump on it, you can call 212-209-2950 to make the make your donation. And I got one more thing to cover before we get into our regular programming, and that's the Buddy system, the WBAI Buddy. If you can make a pledge to donate from your credit card or whatever a credit system you have, $10 a month or more, you become a WBAI Buddy. And the advantage of this to WBAI is that it can count on a one-year commitment of $10 or more each month, and that helps in forecasting payments and what we can do with WBAI. And our general manager came up with a new premium, Michael. I bet you didn't know about it.
No, I did not.
MicroBuddy.
Okay.
Don't laugh. Because I said to one of the workers at the 388 Atlantic Avenue, a MicroBuddy, where is it if you want to do it? It's a $5 donation. And I said, there's no $5 check mark on it. Turns out you have to go to others and you can key in the $5 and it does work. I checked that out already. Okay, so if you can't afford $10 a month and you want to be part of the Buddy system, there's a MicroBuddy and it's $5. A month that is deducted from your credit card. And actually, when you think about it, it comes out to $60 a year. And, you know, listen, we really need it. We're surviving, barely surviving. We've been, it's about almost 2.5 years now. I'm up here at CCNY. We were told, like, it's only for a few months. Well, it's going on more than 2.5 years now. And we were told, we're going to have at least some working studio. The studio, guys, you haven't been in here, but...
I have. Michael, have you been in there?
No, I have not.
Okay, let me
it's
tell
really
you.
It's nice, especially the part with the dripping water and the lights flickering on and off.
No. It's... there are so many things little things that could help. I'm not going to even go into it, okay? But you know what? We're surviving, and I want everyone to know that... we, the Personal Computer Show, and I know that I'm probably speaking for Off the Hook. We put up with it. There's a certain dedication, loyalty to what WBAI stands for. We ask that you do support the station. And you know what? I want to get to regular programming at this point. And one of the big pieces of news that has come across in the past week while we've been gone is Radio Shack. You hear Radio Shack not only got delisted from the New York Stock Exchange, but they basically filed for bankruptcy. And they have about 4,000 stores that are affected. Well, not maybe, I think they're affected, okay? 1,000 of them are franchise-owned. In other words, they're not owned by corporate Radio Shack. They're owned by people who are willing to pay a franchise fee to a Radio Shack. And they're going to continue operation as long as they can. And how they do it is that they'll probably be able to say, listen, I'm not going to go for, you know, the way Radio Shack tells me the brand store carry only these products. If they're smart, they'll carry expanded products. And, you know, it's they should take a look at Fry's. They just should take a look at Micro Center and how the others have expanded into selling little tchotchka items that people do buy. When you go in the Radio Shack, that's just not the case. But of the 2,900 stores that remain under the corporate head, half of them will close up. The other half that are not closing up, they are renting basically a store within the store, and they're giving space to Sprint, and Sprint will be selling their equipment and whatever services they have in there. And David, you had a comment about Radio Shack in your experience and where you are.
I'm out. Okay, I have, like many people, I stopped using radio. Chris, I live in an area, I live in L.A., you live in New York. If you need to go to an electronics store, there are real electronics stores.
Now, wait a minute. Radio Shack was a real electronics store. You could buy resistors, diodes, and transistors.
The key word, I guess, being was.
Yeah, that's right.
When electronics got too complicated for Radio Shack, I mean, I can't go in there and buy a time delay spectrum analyzer, you know, or a logic analyzer.
Or a voltmeter.
I can buy a voltmeter in there.
Oh, okay.
But I can't buy a good voltmeter in there. They're not stocking Fluke meters in there.
Well, so where are there a number of Radio Shack stores where you are that are big sales?
I'm going to run out. I need some stuff. I'm going to go out and see if I can pick up some, because they're having closeout sales. I'm going to go pick up, I need a couple of potentiometers, and I'm going to need, I need some 34-pin Apple iPod connector cable.
But I'm going to warn you about something. I've looked at their prices, and even at these so-called reduced prices, they're still more than the typical Micro Center and Fry's that you go into.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of their problems. I remember in the early 1980s, I went out to Fort Worth. This was about the time the PC just came out, and they had the... You remember the Radio Shack Model 100 notebook? Any of you two remember that?
Sure. Oh, is that
one?
Yeah. One-line text, and it was pretty good. People used it, too. And I went out...
It might have been the most popular laptop computer back when it was like the first or second or third laptop ever made.
It was the first one, called the Model 100.
The Toshiba T1000 was what took over from that.
Well, so what happened was I went out to Fort Worth and I told them what the next generation of, how it should be designed. And I couldn't believe that the management there say, look, don't tell us what to do. We know what you want. And I'm saying to myself, how do you know what I want if you don't even let me tell you what I want?
Maybe they went on to manage the Barnes & Noble Nook division.
Listen, there is a... I don't want to mention his name. There's a comedian on HBO that made a big joke about Radio Shack going out of business the other day. And
it's hilarious. It's available on YouTube. I don't know why you don't want to mention his name.
Well, there's a reason why, Michael.
Okay, I won't mention his name, but if you just search for Radio Shack HBO on YouTube.
Right. The reason why I don't want to mention his name is because it was hilarious, except 26,500 employees, of which half of them are going to lose their job. That's no laughing matter.
Oh, no. He was saying. Oh, he was actually defending the store.
Don't treat it like a joke.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you're an employee of Radio Shack, that hurt.
Oh, of course.
That hurt. You know, let me jump to something else, and I know that Michael knows a little more about it, and I have an update on it. You know, just around a few weeks ago, just at the beginning of the year, let's bring it up. IBM has had problems with revenues and profits, and it's been steadily going down for the last 2-3 years, and they've been taking a big hit on in the stock market. And one of the rumors was that there would be a major layoff of 26% of the staff, or about 118,000 employees. And I said, "Wow, that is huge." I have an update on that, Michael. Do you realize that IBM has acknowledged that there's an update?
There was an update, but I'm not sure there may have been two or three updates. I'm not sure which one you're talking about.
I think this came out January 28th.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so
that's one I probably am aware
of. But. Well, basically, they have already started laying off people in large numbers. They won't acknowledge what the numbers are going to be.
I mean, Hewlett-Packard has laid off quite a few people also.
Yeah, but you know what? Hewlett-Packard says, we're laying off people, but IBM is a little different. They're saying, who, we? We're not laying off people. And, of course, anytime you typical of any company where you have people laid off, they form their own group. There's a blog. There's a, reunion and so on. And there are many complaints, of which probably some of them are legitimate. Some of the complaints is that, yeah, I got a negative review when I've never had a negative review, and based on that, they use that where I'm not laid off, I'm fired.
Yes, I had seen reports about that.
Well, you know what?
If online. This is not a personal computer story, so I'm not sure why we're even discussing it.
Well, it is because, they're in the computer business.
The personal computer business.
Well, they were.
Not even in the server business anymore, I don't think.
Well, the thing is that they acknowledge that it's going to be a high number, and how high, we don't know, but it's going to be bigger than what was in 1993, which was huge. Okay.
The original report about 26% was not true.
Not true, but you know what? It's going to be well over 10%. And I just feel bad for some of the people, the way IBM's doing it. IBM was noted for being very people conscious. They took care of employees, and, it's different times and different company now. And back in 1993, they had a record job cut of 60,000. And they acknowledge that this go-around may very well be more than 60,000. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of people. Hey, when we were last on the air, and I know David was with me, you weren't with me, Michael, we had a caller from Silver Spring, and her name was Patricia, and she had a problem. I looked into it, and one of her problems was that she's using Yahoo email, and she said that...
You can stop right there, Hank. I think that's one of her problems, period, right there.
Well,
Yahoo's email has a terrible reputation, technologically speaking.
Well, let me put it this way. Let me put it this way. One of her complaints is that... hey, guys, can you hold one moment?
Hi, Mike.
Okay. Okay. All right. Now, what one of the complaints is that when she's using Yahoo email, she was not using the she was not using a system for during the whole day, and then but she never logged off her email, and then when she got off, she checked her email and she was on somebody else's account. Can you guys figure out what the cause may be?
No, I had no idea. Did you figure it out?
Well, I can offer a possibility of what happened, okay? And the possibility of what happened was that, as you know, people have dynamic addresses, instead of static addresses. And that dynamic address, you don't own. And theoretically, they could change it every 30 days. And in many cases, sometimes it may take a year, sometimes years before they change the address on you. And I can understand why they have that. And what happens is that...
when Hank says address, he means IP address. And IP address is
I wouldn't imagine that that your login to your email would be dependent on your IP address.
Solely dependent on your IP address.
Yeah.
And if that is the case, that goes to what I said, how technically backwards Yahoo is.
Well,
if that's the case.
Well, no, I don't think it's Yahoo. Now, the thing is, suppose you have a supplier, your ISP, and he's the one that has the IP address, not Yahoo. Okay? Now, if the ISP supplier decides to change your IP address and you're not logged off on your email, You know what happens? You get somebody else's email.
Well, nothing should happen. If it's a well-designed system, nothing should happen at all.
You say nothing should happen.
On a well-designed system?
I think your login should be dependent entirely on your login credential.
Yes, that's what cookies exist for. That's what they were invented for.
Well, let me put it this way.
This sort of thing.
It's either the ISP not forcing a logout before you're switching the IP address, or Yahoo is not timing out properly. Now, is it the fault of Yahoo if the ISP decides to change the address?
It's definitely Yahoo's fault. I don't know what the problem was, but it's definitely Yahoo's fault. So, that should never happen.
Okay, so your recommendation is don't.
Use Gmail.
Use Gmail.
Their spam filtering is better than Yahoo's. They offer more features for email than Yahoo does, and it's the same price.
Well, the advice I had given her was do two things. Number one is contact Yahoo with a problem, and number two is change all your passwords.
You can't really expect any tech support on a free product.
Well, now, wait a minute.
I mean, wait a minute.
Gmail's a free product, so you
right, you can't expect tech support from any free product.
Well, you know what?
I pay for my email. I pay $20 or $25 a year for my email because when something goes wrong, I want tech support.
Oh, okay. Hey, Michael, you know, you were working on a project, and I was reading your blog on defensive computing, and you had something that I was kind of interested in. Can you explain in layman's term what the problem is that you found?
Well, I stumbled into it, and it applies to people who have a separate modem and router. Now, if you're on Verizon, they give you a combination device, which is both a modem router, so it doesn't apply to you. David, I don't know if you have separate modem and router or if you have it combined.
No, combination modem router.
Oh, you have a combination device, so it doesn't apply to you. But a lot of us have separate modems and routers. And we all tend to focus on the router because the router you have to configure, you have to turn on the Wi-Fi and set the Wi-Fi encryption and this and that. But the modem is actually a computer also. And it turns out you can talk to the modem by an IP address, which is not really documented anywhere. It's an internal IP address, which really shouldn't work because you're going through the router out to the internet. And the IP address is 192.168.100.1. I found that if you type that into your web browser, I found it with three different modems from three different companies, that what you're going to get back is not an error message, which you should, because you're saying there's no computer on my network at that IP address, but you're actually going to see a web interface for your modem. And if that's the case, if that works for you, it can be very handy, because you can learn all sorts of technical details about the connection between your modem and your internet service provider. You can see how many channels there are in the modem. You can see the signal strength. I didn't know there were signal strengths for the modem talking to your ISP. You can see how many errors there were in transmitting data back and forth. Chances are there's going to be a log file. Now, just like the Windows log files, there's a lot of messages that are not very important and occur all the time. So you want to look at that when everything's working so you get a feel for what the normal noise is. And then if you ever have a problem with your internet connection, you can look at the modem and see maybe there's some new messages that are not normally there.
Well, Michael, rather than overwhelm people with more details, can you identify your blog, what the URL is, if people want more information on it?
It has a very simple, it's actually a computer world, but they have a very long web page address. The simple web page address is defensivecomputing.info, I-N-F-O.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, I read that, and I said, I understood you. I understood what Michael was saying. And
it
then,
didn't apply to you because with Verizon, you don't have separate router and modem.
Now, what happened was that I spoke to Michael earlier today, and I said, I read your article. It makes sense to me, but, and here's the but, okay? I had a problem with HBO premium channels, of which I was getting about half of them. Half of them, I just don't get it, and the other half I got. So I called up Verizon, and they said, okay, you have two set-tops. I says, yes, I have a standard set top and I have a high definition set top. So let's try getting those channels with both set tops. On the standard set top, no problem at all getting those channels. On the high definition set top, half of the HBO channels wouldn't come up at all. So I said, gee, I guess I got a problem with that. And he says, look, let me do some diagnostic. And much to my surprise, he told me what to do. First, he asked for permission. Can I do it? And I said, yes. And now you have to remember, the TV signal is from the wall. And from the wall, whatever's behind it, I don't know where, you know, it's from Verizon. And it goes right into the set-top box. And then he went to the diagnostic. And Michael, the internal IP address of the set-top was 192.168.100.1.
So we could suggest for everyone who's listening, pull up your web browser and type that IP address into the web browser and see what comes up.
And
maybe you'll see your set-top box.
And I said to myself, wait a minute.
Modem?
I know. And so the
David, try it at home if you haven't.
Yeah, I know. And I had two, three questions on that, okay? The first question I had was, I'm not going to a modem. I'm not going to a router. And yet I can use an IP address to directly address a set-top.
Well, yeah, I can't play with it. I don't have Verizon Fios. That's obviously okay. A different tech.
And then the other thing I brought to Michael's attention is that, you know, I do a lot of networking where I use multiple routers, and I like to put all my peripheral devices, you know, 100 dot something. And I said, you know, I've been having trouble with 100.1. Now I know why. Because I was conflicting.
You assign that to a printer and...
I was trying to have the printer fight with a set-top box, which I didn't know had an IP address.
Yes, you can't have two devices with the same IP address on the network. That just doesn't work.
Yeah, but the thing is, on my remote printer, I need a modem to get to the printer, but yet on a set-top, I don't need the modem, I don't need a router, I go directly to the set-top.
Well, I can't fully explain Verizon.
Dave, do you have any idea that what the problem might be?
I hate Verizon. I hate it and I love it. We're having a lot of trouble with Verizon in that a lot of things that worked really well on DirecTV don't work so well on Verizon. For example, they still have all of your channels. Every box you go to, you've got a standard definition channel, you've got a high definition channel, and now you've got a 3D channel for every one of your premium channels.
Right.
Wow. And it ought to just sense what kind of throughput you're going to the device and normalize it to that, which is what DirecTV did.
By the way, for those who are listening to this, they're saying they probably want to know, so what was the problem? The answer is, I have a serviceman coming out because they said, gee, we don't know what the problem is. Because if one set-top box works fine, the other doesn't, and they don't know what it is. And I'm more puzzled.
And if you're worried that there's no more jobs in tech support, go to work for Verizon because they're sending a lot of people out to re-hook stuff up.
Yeah.
Realize that your modem and your set-top box are connected to a thing in your attic that goes to a thing on your back wall that goes to a thing on your roof that goes to the telephone pole where there's another thing. There's like... There's a battery box. There's a distribution.
David, joining me right now because he got stuck in traffic is Stevie DB, and you made some, you know, he used to work for Verizon, and you made some really negative comments about Verizon, and he's making these faces.
I got mine. That's all I have to say. I went to a retirement party on last Friday. A guy had 49 3/4 years, and the other guys only had 46 years.
And Stevie was smart. He got out earlier than that.
I only did 29 and a half.
Well, good thing they're not working at IBM.
This is WBAI FM 99.5 New York. Duke had a study that was done recently, and I'm looking at it, and this was based in the early 2000s. Duke University did a study, and they track a couple of thousand, or actually not only a thousand, about 1 million disadvantaged middle school students, okay? And what they found is that giving them computing equipment didn't help them at all.
How about teaching them to use it? How might that work?
Well, I think I read it carefully, and they have teachers to teach, but you need someone to really mentor them and guide them. You just can't say, here's how you use a computer, here it is, go to it. You just can't do that with these were, what, fifth through eighth graders. So,
but you found for the majority that it didn't work at all. So where is the problem there?
The problem is that the parents, the teachers, and all those who are responsible for the children should take an interest in working with the kids. You just can't leave them by themselves.
Right.
That's what it is.
It starts with the parents, though.
Yes. But, however, parents find it very difficult in single-family homes and also where you have both parents working. So, the economy doesn't lend itself to saying, sure, you know, it's a parental a responsibility. It is. It's not an excuse, but, you know.
It's an excuse, single-parent homes.
You really think so, huh?
Yep.
Yeah.
I think there's even a larger issue than that. I think that we don't have a culture that honors scholarship and learning.
Yeah, that's not set up for that.
You know what? I tend to agree with you because I was going through some stuff, and the president made a proposal, and there's a lot of things to that. Like he wants to make the community colleges free. Okay, well, obviously, when he means free, he means free to those attending. And I looked at some of the numbers because if it works, fine. If it doesn't work, then we should look at some alternative. And here are some of the statistics, okay? In the senior colleges, in other words, the bachelor's program where it's 4 years, 66% of students do not graduate in the period of 4 years. It takes longer than 4 years. In other words, two-thirds of the students take longer than 4 years
of
to graduate.
Of all colleges?
Of the broad spectrum of senior colleges.
Yeah.
And in the community college, this was a shocker, okay? 26%, only 26% graduate in the two-year time frame. The rest take 2, 3, 4 years in the public community colleges.
Yeah, people are working jobs and they're working at going to community college.
Well,
Hank, but there are lots of degrees that one can get from a community college that cannot be done in 2 years. For example, my wife just finished a nursing program, an ASN,
mm-hmm.
an associate's degree in nursing, and it was 5 years of 15-unit semesters. 5 years.
Well, let me put it this way. I don't know what is in California, but I know in New York State you can get a nursing degree in 2 years. Of course, you have to be a full-time student.
We get back to computers?
Yeah.
Right.
Now...
Thank you, Michael.
Do it in 2 years if you have 2 years of prerequisites.
Well,
learning about computers, you mean?
Yeah. Hey, Michael, one of the things that, you always like to talk about is non-Windows, something that's not Windows at all, right?
Yes.
Now,
I'm getting tired of Windows. It's been a long time.
Okay. How much Linux are you using?
That's actually a difficult question to answer. Because I don't use Linux on the desktop, but I have an internet radio that's running Linux. I have a router that's running Linux. I have a NAS box that's running Linux.
I'm going to throw it right back at you. It's running Linux, but let's get back to computing, right? That was what you said, right? Well, the reason why I brought that up is, while we were out, there was a Raspberry Pi Model 2 that came out?
Yes. Mine isn't here yet, but I ordered it.
And it's the same old price as the original one? And the old one, they dropped the price down to $20.
Does that include a case, or do you just get like a naked motherboard?
That's a naked motherboard. Cases run between $8 and $30, depending on how fancy of a case you want.
I got mine for $6 because it's very cheap, but I saw a case for $200. I says, forget that, okay?
But the base Pi is $35.
But what are you going to do with it? That's the point.
Okay. Now, wait a minute, Stevie. You got to hear the rest of it, okay?
Okay.
So after they made the announcement that there'll be a quad-core processor Raspberry Pi Model 2, Microsoft...
With 1 gigabyte of RAM.
Yep. With Ethernet and USB and all that. And they also changed it to a micro SD from an SD for storage. And Microsoft made an announcement. They will offer for free... Windows 10 to run on it?
Yes and no.
What do you mean no?
Well, it's not the Windows 10 that you're going to be running on a Dell laptop.
No.
Windows RT version 2.
Correct. In other words, it's the... but you know what?
It's an operating system.
The difference between RT Windows and the x86 Windows is you can't run x86-based applications.
Legacy Windows apps, classic Windows apps, you don't get any of those.
You know?
You just get Metro apps, or if you want to call them modern apps.
So
you
Dave.
You want to call them Tile World apps, or you want to call them Windows Store apps.
You know what I call them?
Just get the new ones. You don't get the old ones.
You know what I call them? I think what Microsoft is doing is saying, hey, we're going to put a development tool that is, from a platform point of view, you know, if you use the right programming language, you can port your application, if successful, at a Raspberry Pi, you could, you know, move it up and, you know, you can monetize your app.
It depends on what you want to do, what you want to build. Because you don't have to use that application if you have an older software.
Well, the thing is, there are many more familiar development tools for Windows than there is for Linux. Okay?
Well, Stevie, your basic Raspberry Pi comes out of the box running a version of Debian called Raspbian Linux, and it comes with a development platform to write Python.
Python, right.
And also a graphical programming language, but you can put Xbox Media Center on it, and I have a Raspberry Pi that's acting as a Roku in my house.
I think that you guys should explain to the public what you actually can use this thing for.
Lots of stuff. I replaced a set-top box on a television set with a Raspberry Pi.
Whoa, wait a minute. Was it legal?
Sure.
Yeah, it's legal. You can replace it.
It's running Xbox Media Center.
Oh, okay.
And it's receiving free television from all over the world.
What else can you do?
Well, that's a lot, Stevie.
I'm learning a lot of robotics. I got started in Raspberry Pi, Stevie. When I went, I was putting some stuff in the Magic Castle that had to be automated.
Tell us all about it.
I was going to buy Arduinos, and I have a friend of mine's son who's in from Paris, who lives here now in L.A., and he said, no, get a Raspberry Pi. It's so easy. And he invited me out he works at a engineering shop where they build amusement park rides for Disney.
Okay.
An Imagineering shop. And they don't ever build circuitry at all anymore. They just jam a Raspberry Pi into anything that they're building because
it's a little computer.
The new one has 40 I.O. pins, programmable I.O. pins. It has 4 USB ports. It has HDMI, and it has high-quality audio all built into it.
And in terms of horsepower, I read that the new Raspberry Pi is roughly 6 times faster than the old one.
Six times faster. But you see, if you're going to compile down an application and not use it as a general-purpose computer, okay, and this is what I'm saying, as a specific application device where you're going to make it run your quadricopter or your video camera or your smart thermostat or something like that.
The security system.
It is cheaper than building a circuit board, and it can do it. It's strong enough to do any of those things. It's a little bit feeble when you try to browse the web with it. But I'm going to assume that you already have a regular.
No. Wait. The original Raspberry Pi had a browser called Midori.
It did.
And it was sluggish. It was sluggish.
Browsing the web.
Yeah.
It's not for that.
No, wait a minute. Yeah. The thing is, if it's 6 times faster and you could put Explorer on or Safari on, I think it's going to make a difference, especially in the school system.
What?
In the school system where the kids, you know, I know that with my granddaughters, they when they go home, they fight for the computers.
The Raspberry Pi we're talking about.
Yeah, and you know what they use the computer for? To go on the internet. That's all they do.
The Raspberry Pi was developed by the BBC to teach children the principles of computing. It is a computing teaching platform.
Yeah, but the internet is going to be slow. It's not for that.
No, it's not slow at all.
Well, maybe it's the newer one, which has so much more horsepower.
Yeah, and also, when you say horsepower, it's not only in the CPU, but the fact that you have more core. And that you could put a higher storage on it.
A gig of memory, quad core. That's a good piece of hardware.
If you were to do a search on Raspberry Pi projects, I think you'd be surprised to find that someone has actually. I mean, I can imagine what he did. All right, he put, I think was it 128 of Raspberry Pi in parallel to build his version of a supercomputer.
Right, and he made a case out of Lego blocks.
Right. No, no, a girl did that. A young girl did that by building a case with Lego blocks.
Wonderful. Yeah.
So, look, you know what? If it can help the kids to learn, it's good. Like yeah. I was talking before about, you know, students, when you throw tech at them and you don't guide them, they sit there and you know what? They either play games or they just go on the internet and do other things and they're not really learning. They're not learning
well,
at all.
Stevie, are you familiar with the Arduino?
No.
They're controller boards.
The Arduino is a controller board?
Controller boards that have been around for years. And the Raspberry Pi is like a completed Arduino set on one board.
Yeah, I know about controller boards, not Arduino.
Oh, Arduino.
Arduinos are computer tinker toys that you use to build stuff out of.
I used to use controller boards fixing printers. The older printers had
yes,
controller
boards.
Yes, but
these are controller boards that you use to build your own stepper motor-driven robots and things like that.
Yeah, see, that's what I wanted you guys to talk about, Raspberry Pi. That's what you can do is build a robot with them.
Lots of robotics applications.
Well, yeah. The thing is,
building artificial limbs and all kinds of stuff powered by Raspberry.
You know what? Yeah. Hey, Dave, you know what? I'm going to give you a long-term assignment, okay? And see if
yeah.
you say...
2 weeks.
No. See if you can define a project that the average person
exactly
can do as opposed to
that wants
a
to.
Nerd can design a robot
Link
or a drone.
Downloading Xbox Media Center, and you can attach it to a hard drive with video and audio on it and use it as a music and video player connected
well,
to a computer.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let me give you an assignment, okay? How do I use a Raspberry Pi, which I know you can, and use it as an internet radio?
Oh.
Oh.
You
well,
have that already on your computer.
You, that. Huh? You put Xbox Media Center on it.
Yeah.
No. Now you got to buy another box, okay?
iTunes.
No. You can download Xbox Media Center as the operating system.
Oh, in other words, you're using the software of Xbox.
Yes.
Good. You know what? Define the project and we'll make a premium out of that.
No.
I built it. It's running. It's sitting next to me. Want me to turn it up? So
No. Hey, Michael,
paid a lot of money for my internet radio.
I was just going to say, Michael, how much was your internet radio?
Yeah. Around $180.
And you know, but you know what? You didn't have to build it. It was instant gratification. All you do is open, you know, tear off the plastic and, you know, just plug it into an outlet and hook up the Ethernet cable, and you were up and running, right?
Well, and it does have a small screen. I don't think a Raspberry Pi is going to have a small screen.
iTunes has hundreds of radio stations.
You can actually get any variety of small screens, but you're talking money now. The small screen started about $50. You can get a 7-inch touch screen.
Wait a minute.
You can get a 5-inch
I know,
screen. You can
but,
get a 10-inch screen.
By the time you add all those parts in, you have a $300 unit. You might as well buy yourself a... what Michael did was he bought himself a Windows tablet for, what, $160?
$150.
And are you surprised you got the capability for only $150?
Actually, I was. Yeah.
You know, I lost my Android tablet. So since I have to support Android and demonstrate Android, I went out to Amazon and bought myself a cheap quad core Dragon Touch Android tablet, and it's not as solid of a build as the Nexus was, but it's a bigger screen, and it actually runs faster
Michael,
than it did.
I had asked you a trick question, and you fell for it.
Okay.
You hate Windows, but then now my question is, why did you buy a tablet with Windows?
I was just curious what what it's like to run Windows 8.
You see, you may knock it, but you still use it, right?
And also, you know, I want to run Windows 10, so this way I can run Windows 10 on this 8-inch tablet.
Mm-hmm. Okay, listen.
This summer I am buying a new tower system to run Windows 10.
You don't need a tower to run Windows 10.
I need a tower to move all of my existing drives and accessories into it.
Why don't you do it with a Raspberry Pi?
Because I'm already running a Raspberry Pi. I don't want to run stripped down Windows 10. I'm going to want to see how it serves as a Windows environment to move forward in my Windows installation.
Okay. Hey, let me make a statement at this time that this is WBAI-FM 99.5 New York. And normally during this time slot, Off the Hook is on. And hopefully we can get them back on next week at the time of 7 to 8 or maybe even expanded.
Is there anybody calling right now?
No, wait. We're not taking phone calls tonight. We're not taking phone calls tonight.
For the pledge.
We don't know because in the old days, we were able to see if any phone calls are coming in. And this new system, it's called Retro Studio, where this is a tinker toy. We don't know what's going on. We have no idea if anyone calling. We don't even know if we're even on the air unless someone calls us and we can't get calls. And then, of course, you know, the one of the things that always says, well, how can we text you? How can we, you always say, we have no internet service in the studio. So we are, I
the
think...
The phone number you're giving out for pledges, is that answered in Brooklyn?
I don't know. It's a 212-209-2950. And I don't care if it's Brooklyn or Barbados. Just donate some money, really. Just donate
any
some money.
Any place that begins with a B is fine with Hank.
212-209-2950. We need your help. As you can see, there's a lot of things we can talk about. A lot of things we're going to even continue in the next hour to tell you about some new technologies that that's coming around, and we're going to question some of them.
You didn't say before about the BAI Buddy. Can that be done on a website, or is that only available by calling on the phone?
I would say, you could definitely do it with a website, and if you want to do it on the phone, do it on the phone. Let them do the data entry.
Okay.
212-209-2950. What we have available is please make a donation, as evidenced by the fact that we got preempted last week. We got preempted the week before last. And unless we can raise some money that can help the station and where we become credible, we're going to be preempted again and again and again. You know, it's like in The Death of a Salesman by Arthur Miller. It's not what we have done before. Forget about that. What have you brought in lately? Unfortunately, with the crisis in terms of our financial status that we have at WBAI, it seems like every other month we have a fundraiser. Well, I don't want to apologize for it, but that's the nature of it to survive. And if we have to do it, hopefully we can not only raise enough money to survive the two-month period, but enough so that it can go beyond that so we don't have all these preemptions. Because with all these preemptions, as you noted in the last 2 weeks, we get preempted. And, of course, they would say, hey, what have you done lately? And we say, yeah, but, you know, we have listeners that have supported the station. I realize it's the same listeners, okay? But we're going to ask you to dig in a little deeper. We really need your help. I know that there have been many complaints about the premiums not being delivered. Well, you know what? If you can make a cash donation, it'd be great. If you want a premium, I'll tell you what we have. We have the XP support kit. It's a DVD, $50. We have the Windows 7 support kit, where it has XP support as well as Windows 8 transition software on it. These two pieces, the software is no longer available online, no longer available from Microsoft. It's available from WBAI. They're both available for $50 each. We have the Linux distros where you can run most Windows applications pretty easily, okay? And the three of them, they're Makulu, Zorin, and Rhino Linux, all right? You want to download it? You can download it. They work fine now, except it'll take a long time to download. I know that with Rhino, it took me about 10 hours to download. And, of course, Michael, you could probably attest to this. When you download things, you get trapped with download managers. You get trapped with crapware that comes with it. And in a way...
Oh, yeah, sometimes you have to be very careful. There's a big button that says download here, and it's not what you think it is.
And they use double negatives. You don't do not want, right? And, of course, that means yes.
That I hadn't seen.
Yeah, they do that. And then some of them just outright don't even ask you whether you want it or not. You get it. Because my wife would say to me, I didn't ask for ask. You know what ask is, right? Ask.com?
Shusha.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Oh. And so I finally taught her how to get rid of it every time. But she says, why does it keep popping up? I says, you know, well,
that's the price of free software.
Yeah. In a way, I can't blame them for giving you crapware, because if you don't want them to do it, they won't be offering it. So in a large sense, a lot of the stuff that we're offering, those three premiums, XP Support Kit, the Windows 7 Support Kit, and the Linux distros, we filtered all of that out. You don't have to worry about it. You don't, and some of them, as you know, Michael, they say, give us your email address. And then they say, now you have to confirm your email address before you can download. In other words, they figure, okay, you want software? It's going to cost you. I have your email address. And if they use it, you don't mind. But you know what? They end up distributing it to other people, too.
Hank, I think most of the money that comes, and I mean like 95% of the money in ad-supported software revenue models, is tracking customers and selling information about them and not distributing ads.
Let me put it this way. I think it's both, okay? I think it's both. I think it's both.
Right, it is both, but I think it's mostly tracking.
Well, now, we have these three premiums, and then we have the two buddy offering, $10 or more for the standard WBAI buddy, or the micro buddy, which is like, okay, you're on a budget, $5 a month. And by the way, I assume that the $5 a month is that you only smoke half a pack of cigarettes a month and you can give up on that, right?
How much a month?
People only can smoke half a pack a month, right?
Yeah, people can do that.
Okay. Michael, have you ever smoked before?
No, never.
Never. That's good. How about you, David?
I smoked 5 packs a day for about 15 years.
Wow.
5 packs.
Wow.
5.
You know, if you were still smoking, you know how much that is in New York?
$60.
$60 a month.
Let's put it that
way.
Wait,
a day. A day. So that's $60 a day of smoking?
More than that. It's more. It's $13 a pack.
Well, 5 packs.
26.
So I said $60, 5 packs.
Wow. Yeah, okay.
Wow, $60.
That wasn't my most expensive habit, Hank.
We won't talk about the LSD and all that other stuff, okay?
Wow. No, nobody habitually takes LSD that I've ever known.
Timothy Leary,
I don't think it's a habit-forming drug. It's too weird.
He used that instead of the computer, you mean?
I don't know. 212-209-2950. We are on an expanded schedule, and for those who have been staying with us or who had joined us in expectation of Off the Hook, we're fundraising for WBAI, and hopefully we can raise a sufficient amount. I don't know what the word sufficient is, because it's like a moving target, but we have to raise some amount of money so that we don't get preempted. And I mean, like, with Off
That's
the Hook...
That's not going to stop us from getting preempted.
Well, Off the Hook has been preempted 3 weeks, and you know what? It's
Three weeks in a row.
And you know, it's tough to build an audience. It's tough to maintain an audience, because after 3 weeks, you say, are you still there?
Our listeners are dedicated.
You know what? They may be dedicated, but they're not stupid, okay?
Who's calling them stupid?
That's right. That's so when they no longer tune in to WBAI, the whole thing goes...
I assume Off the Hook is on for 2 hours next week?
We don't know. It could be us on for 2 hours. It could be Off the Hook on for 2 hours. It could be Off the Hook and us each on for 1 hour, which is probably the better way of scheduling. But we don't schedule, you know?
Nope.
Joe and I have been on radio for over 30 years.
In a row.
And they don't ask us if we know anything about radio. Okay. And they don't understand that when you have all these preemptions, they're unscheduled, and you don't announce them ahead of time, and you don't even tell people when you're on, you can't get an audience, okay? Like, we were told that we were on for 2 hours only a few days ago.
I just found out today, actually.
I know. I found out over the weekend, and then I said to myself, okay, I'm told on Saturday, I got 2 hours on Wednesday, but there's no mechanism of saying, like, hey, general manager, can you play a card that the personal computer show is going to be on Wednesday for 2 hours?
It's too complicated.
That's too complicated. That's too much to ask for.
Well, our schedule, whenever we know it, is posted on our website, pcradioshow.org.
Right. And if we're preempted, we also let you know. And Michael, you do a great job on the website.
Thank you.
Yep.
Michael, you know, I had a question
about... Wait, the website, pcradioshow.org.
Yep. Michael, I there was a couple of people who made some suggestions. Maybe you could think about it, okay? Is that we do have each broadcast up on, you know, it's posted that you can download, you can listen to it. However, they go to the archive section where they have the older programs and they get lost in navigating to the more current shows. Any way of combining them together?
We'll talk about this off the air.
Okay.
I'm not sure exactly what you're getting at.
Well,
what's the old shows?
Yeah. Some people, when they navigate, they'd like to be able to say, like, on the homepage, like, okay.
2011, they had a show.
Yeah, well... Well, Michael, we will talk about it, okay? All right, we're coming out to the end of the hour. I just want to tell everyone that this is the Personal Computer Show. We will continue for another hour. It's WBAI-FM 99.5 New York. And we're asking for donations. The phone number to call is 212-209-2950. Quickly, the premium is Windows XP Support Kit. That has all the XP supporting software that's no longer available, including SP, the unauthorized, well, it's really authorized because Microsoft doesn't ban it or condemn it. The SP4 support for XP. We also have the Windows 7 support kit, which has the XP support so you can run XP programs, as well as the transitional programs that enable Windows 8.1 to look more like a Windows 7 operating system. Along with that, we have the Linux distros with Windows support, and it's Makulu, Zorin, and Rhino Linux on three separate DVDs. So it's not just one DVD. These are all bootable DVDs, up and run. You don't have to do any special work on it, preparation or configuration. Just put it in and boot up, and these will run on just about almost all the basic XP systems.
That's a great thing about Linux and something Windows does not do, in that you can run the whole system off a bootable CD or bootable DVD.
Oh, Michael, you're not quite right on that.
You can kick the tire, see if you like it, and then if you do like it, you can install it onto the hard drive.
You're not quite right on that because I run Windows 8 off a stick.
Yeah, isn't that only the Enterprise Edition version of Windows 8?
No, actually, there is a hacker version that enables you to do it.
Okay.
All right. Did I make that available? No, because I just want to keep it simple for this go-around. But I may, I've done it, I've tested it, and it works, okay? But it requires a little more, what would you call it, user intervention. But it's capable. It does not have to be the enterprise version at all. It could be the regular home premium version. But it does take work to do it, though. And then we have the buddy. So we're going to start the. You know what? Let's start like a brand new show, Stevie.
Okay. Right ahead. Well, like a brand new show. Okay. Well, this is WBAI New York 99.5 FM. It's 8 o'clock, February the 11th. 2015, and it's time for the second half of the Personal Computer Show. Ding, 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 ding.
Where's the theme music?
Hey, you know, you didn't give me any warning to get the theme music up.
Well, Stevie, here's the theme music, and while you're doing that...
I can get the theme music up now that you're told.
Well, you know, Stevie, I have something else for you, okay? We have
that 10-pound bag of 20s that I was asking for.
We have an interview, which we're going to play in a few minutes from now, where we have Jeff Fox has joined us as a reporter, and he's been interviewing people with startup operations. And this is a very interesting interview, but we'll get to it a little later, all right? And I just want to start off by telling everyone, if you're joining us now, welcome to the Personal Computer Show. It's Hello World out there. We are now on our regular time schedule. We have three basic premiums that we are offering: the XP support, the Windows support, the DVD, the Windows 7 support DVD, and the Linux distros with Windows support on three different DVDs. So there's three different operating systems. Actually, it's the Linux with three different versions, okay? And we have the, and each of them are only $50 requested donation. We also are offering the WBAI Buddy, $10 or more a month. And we have the Micro Buddy for those who are really on a budget, $5 a month. And if you really are really down and out, and we do understand that, okay? We do understand that. Just make a whatever donation you can. You know, the numbers came out last week on the unemployment numbers, and it's somewhat deceiving. I looked at the Bureau of Labor numbers. They, I think, was it the unemployment rate is down to, what, 5.3, 5.6. However, 44% of the jobs are full-time jobs. The other 50-plus percent are all part-time jobs.
And this relates to computers how?
That people who are listening and they have a part-time job, we understand, we feel your pain. We're asking for you to make a donation. So we do understand that, you know, we, you know, they call it full.
Hank?
Yeah, what?
How does that compare to the percentage of part-time jobs versus full-time jobs in other periods of American history?
It's been more than half in other periods. Right now we're under half. We're 44%, which is borne out in that the median income has dropped, whereas in the past, you know, every year the median income would increase a lot or a little, but it would always increase by a lot or stay flat, at least flat at the very minimum. This has dropped, and the reason why it's dropped is because when you work part time, you're not making as much, and if you're not making as much and you do want to support WBAI, it's difficult. We do understand that. Okay, so. If you can, we do have the Micro Buddy for $5. Make a donation. We would appreciate it. And if you're having any problems at all with your premiums, just keep contacting us. I know Stevie's been doing a good job of harassing us, and we in turn contact Atlantic Avenue and say, look, you got to fix it. You got to fix it. We understand that it's the nature of the organization we have because we're running on a shoestring. We're running, in a sense, you know, the studio could be in, let's put it this way, I'm not going to complain about the studio. I'm glad we're here. Unfortunately, it's a lot less than what it ideally should be. So if you can make the donation, 212-209-2950. And one of the things that I want to talk about before we go to this interview, okay, is that there was a big to-do, and this is tied into something we spoke about in the first hour. You know, that item about Samsung is forewarning the public that with a smart TV, they can listen to all your conversations.
No. Let's not blow this out of proportion.
Good. Now you tell me what you understand it to be.
Well, I don't think this is a story at all. I think this is your standard scare headline.
No.
Page views. There's a feature on Samsung smart TVs where you can talk to the TV and command it to do, I don't know what, change the channel or whatever. This is an optional feature. You can turn it on and off. And if you turn
Wait. The default is on. The default is on. And unless you know about it, you don't turn it off. And the other thing is with a TV, it's always on because this instant on is because you have the TV with very low voltage, you know, low current going through, having it on. That's why you get it turned on so quickly.
And apparently Samsung doesn't have a keyword. Like if you want to talk to an Android device, you have to say, okay, Google. If you want to talk to Amazon's Echo, you have to say Alexa first. So apparently when this feature is on, it's always listening to every word you say. But Samsung disclosed that.
Yep, they disclose it, but the it is on, and you have to know to take it off. Which, by the way, takes me to another item. Remember Verizon with their super cookies?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was to me a very big deal.
Well, this is a big deal because they say they will allow customers to actually opt out. What do you mean, opt out? I should be required to opt in, not opt out. I mean, you know, that's ridiculous, okay? Most people, when they get the equipment, they take it out of the box, they start using it. They don't know that there's an opt-out. You know, they should make that illegal. Everything
First
should be
opt-in. They're planning on letting you opt out. They haven't yet actually enabled you to opt out.
Right, but they're also saying it's an opt-out and not an opt-in.
Yes, well, it tells you everything you need to know.
Regardless, this is the norm for just about everything that comes your way these days.
Right.
A lot of the support revenue for everything is spying on you.
Right.
And it's just the normal way that business is going to be done from here on out.
Yep. You know, David, I was asked a question a couple of days ago. What do I think of Internet of Things? And I would say it's coming.
How many things do you have on the Internet so far? You've got computers and tablets.
Dave, here was my answer, okay?
And radios.
With the Internet of Things,
radios.
It's coming whether you want it or not. But where is the concern for security?
Actually, the security is laughable. We're working on something, but it's trying to put a lasso around the moon because your car is on the Internet these days. Your set-top boxes are on the Internet, and you have accepted so many user license agreements that have said, okay, spy on me night and day, take pictures of me when I'm naked and sell them to the communists. You've agreed for them to do anything that they want to do with data about you.
How do we change that?
It's funny because we keep saying, you know, here we saw, who was it? Anthem got 80 million users' medical information stolen.
Oh, that just happened recently.
I don't really care if my medical information got stolen. Oh, yeah? What about when you can't get a job in a couple of years because people can know that you're a diabetic and you're going to be more expensive to have as an employee?
Oh, how about this?
Well, that's against the law. But if you can't tell, if you have no privacy, you have no civil rights, and I mean that.
Then how do we change it?
Well, one of the best
you're going to have to start off by looking out for yourself, okay? But you should be writing to your senator and writing to your congressman and saying, "I want net neutrality. I want guaranteed privacy. I don't want companies to be there. They are sneaking this in everywhere. I cannot even tell you all of the details. I just came from a big computer security briefing that I can't even tell you what it's called or where it was, but it was mostly about the loss of privacy, okay? And you are losing privacy, and it's not just to the NSA. It's to Bank of America.
So you know what?
Coca-Cola Corporation.
Okay, do you
and
know, Dave,
the companies that steal your privacy and sell it to those companies, that once it's been resold, then it's out of your control forever, and it can be sold to criminals, to crazy people, to everybody.
You have no privacy. Okay,
you
Dave.
Have no civil rights.
Can I tell you what step one is? And I think you agree with me. Step one is know who your representatives are.
Yes, Fred, that's true politically.
Politically? No, seriously. A lot of people don't even know who their congressman is.
Yes.
They don't know who their councilman is.
Find out who your representatives are. Technologically, get out of Windows.
Number one, and technologically, number two is get in the habit of using a VPN.
And number three,
VPN. I use one. I sell one. I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to look like I'm just pumping up my own product. But using a VPN is a very good idea. There are free ones out there that work just fine. I happen to like the one my company makes. There are people who have issues with it. There's bunches of them. There's lots of VPNs. It's a hot issue. A lot of the things that we suggest here, it's funny because a lot of the things that we suggest here are way beyond the reach of the average computer user. The average computer user takes the computer out of the box, plugs it in, and never thinks about configuring it ever again.
I just had
somebody who works at my company call me and complain that their computer was so loaded down with viruses that they had to throw it away and get a new one, which is just absolutely not true and never happens to anyone ever.
Dave.
Okay?
Dave, you know what? I'm going to transition now to Jeff Fox's interview with Brandon Benson.
Right on. I'll go mute.
On data breaches, which is exactly what we're talking about. Stevie?
Hi, this is Jeff Fox for the Personal Computer Radio Show, and I'm at the Hacker Conference ShmooCon in Washington, D.C., with Brandon Benson, who's a senior security analyst at Security Metrics. Brandon made a presentation today at the conference about point-of-sale hacking and breaches. I've gotten together with Brandon to chat a little bit about retail security, and names like Target and Home Depot quickly come to mind. Brandon, what impression do you think the public has of these retailer breaches?
People are starting to become numb to the breaches.
Breach fatigue.
There's breach fatigue, I believe. We saw so many breaches in 2014. We saw so many breaches in so many stores and in merchants hit that I believe that customers or consumers are starting to get to the point where they're, it's expected, or it's the norm, or it's commonplace. And that's not good. That's actually quite sad.
It's not going to end anytime soon. Do you agree with that?
I would agree with that. I think anytime for big and small organizations to affect a change that's going to take an insecure environment and change it to a secure environment takes time, and it takes effort, and it takes knowledge.